glasses.
That's so dumb.
Velger.
Oh, you idiot.
Mass.
Holy crap.
Velger and Mass.
I hate that.
98.5. The Sports Hub.
Gostkowski from the 18-yard line with a 28-yard attempt for the win. Tied at 40. Allen right knee down. Ryan turns toward Gostkowski, now to Cardona. The snap and play. Swing the right leg. Kick lifted into the uprights. Right down the middle. A game winner for Gostkowski. And the Patriots prevail 43-40.
It's the great John Sterling once said, raise your glass. Man, do I need one.
And that's high in the air to left field. Benintendi with his back against the wall makes the catch. The ball game is over. And Boston wipes the brow and hangs on to win game two. Kimbrel the save. Series all even at one apiece.
Two huge wins by the Patriots and the Red Sox last night. Huge wins. Entertaining games. Awesome. Tremendous stuff. Great night in Boston. Quote, why did it feel like both teams lost last night? End quote. Who said it?
Murray.
No, please. Don't label me with that. As it is, I was bitching a beetle last night in the postgame. Now all my Twitter mentions are, I mean, like, getting all the shrapnel from everything you guys say. Now people think I hate running backs, which couldn't be further from the truth.
You do.
Because, you know, through osmosis, being around you, Mike, who hates running backs in the position and never wants anyone drafting him in the first round, people think I hate running backs. Thanks for that.
No, you're welcome.
Yeah. So, no, I didn't email that this morning. I got that email and I immediately deleted it.
Are people taking a victory lap over the fact that Sony Michel had your third highest runs per carry average last night?
Oh, I'm sure they are.
No. What I'm saying is, but they do understand that James White gained more per carry and something named
Kenyon Barner,
who is still an idolized, I don't know who that is. Some totally new guy off the street had a higher yards per carry average than Sony Michel. So
I'm still waiting for Ralph Webb to get in there.
Does that tell you that the yards are there or what? But anyway, that's not what we're talking about. Maz, that's how you felt this morning. Why did it feel like both teams lost last night? Do you still feel that way?
Not as bad as I did last night, but I still look at the two teams and their inability to sort of, you know, I say play defense in the case of the Red Sox. It comes down to pitching. But that side of the ball, if you will, I just feel like there were too many holes there. And I like a team that can do all of it. So I put a premium on that. Like, it's one thing to beat someone 43-40 or 7-5 every night. But some night you're going to have to win 1-0 or 2-1. And I feel like the games are sloppy. Even the Patriots defensively, oh man, 31 points in 10 minutes in the second half. I can't say that stat enough. I'm sorry. The Chiefs in the second half had the ball for 10 minutes. 10 minutes, they scored 31 points. Don't you find that unbelievable?
Yes, it speaks to what I've been talking about all day. That is, the one thing you do have the right to be worried about with the Patriots is the big plays and still the kick coverage. Like, they finally got wise and just started kicking out of the back of the end zone. But
you didn't like that one that they just popped up at like the 25-yard line?
Between the pooch kicks, the glorified mortar kicks, and all this stuff they're dinking around. What are they doing?
I have no idea. I have no, their kick coverage game, and it sucked in the preseason, by the way. This is not a new thing. Granted, it's preseason. They haven't covered kicks well since the start of this year.
Yeah, it's like they're still trying to get used to the new rule or something. And outside of Gostkowski and the way he kicked the field goals, like, the special teams last night were atrocious.
Okay, but so anyway, you know, so you're sort of feeling like there's fatal flaws on both the Red Sox and the Patriots. And
I would
just say I agree with the flaws. The defense on the Patriots is disappointing to me that they allowed those big plays. I didn't think that was going to happen. I thought they were better than that, or better coached than that, or just would have that buttoned up, and they didn't. Disappointing. Fatal flaw? So it's just another bad defense in a league full of bad defenses. Okay? And on the Red Sox, I saw them play poorly at home against New York, too, and then go to New York and totally dial it in and play two excellent ball games. So I agree that if the Red Sox play the way they played this weekend in Houston, they're probably in trouble. But I've seen them dial it in in the past. I don't know why they're playing this way at Fenway. It's weird.
Four games in a row.
And sloppiness, laziness, boneheaded plays in all four games, really. But They went to New York and were flawless. So if they can do the same thing in Houston, you're in business.
Okay, so again, but you're talking about a change now. Like if they play better, and I'm not ruling out the fact that they can play better. I'm just telling you that I come off a game like that. When I said, why did it feel like both teams lost last night? Is because I look at the way they play and that doesn't feel like championship caliber play to me. And I would say the same for the Patriots. I know the Patriots can score. I knew they were going to score in Kansas City. I think I said to you over and over last week, I just don't see how Kansas City is going to stop the Patriots in this game. I don't see how it's going to happen. But the other side, 31 points in 10 minutes. I can't ever remember that from a Bill Belichick team. I'm sorry. Again, overall, the Chiefs had the ball.
Especially, Maz, what makes it worse is that they pounded all week. No big plays, no big plays, no big plays. After coaching them all week on it, they didn't take the coaching.
Mike, they held the ball in this game.
Or incapable of taking the coaching or something.
They had a time of possession advantage that was 36-24 overall. In the second half, it was 20-10. And they gave up 31 points in the second half. Like, I can't ever remember that of a Bill Belichick team.
Yeah, but the Chiefs have been on, I think, every week except for week one, Maz. You've watched this team. You watched them against Yerners and Garoppolo in the game that he got hurt. You're Binky.
Okay,
you see how explosive they are offensively.
Okay, then how did they only score 9 in the first half?
Well, because Mahomes had the yips in the first half. He had wide open plays that he just missed. And granted, credit to the blitzes, too, that were dialed up at times to make him frustrated like that. But again, the kid's the real deal. It was all a matter of time before he settled down.
Yeah, but settling down or a matter of time at 31 points in 10 minutes.
I don't care how many hills he has them running. Belichick during the week, he heard that, oh, he's going to, you know, because it's speed on top of speed, and you're going to see, you know, more dime packages, and these guys are going to be, the personnel is what it is. These Rutgers players, the suckleckers, they are what they are. That's why I wasn't that surprised. It played out the way I thought it was. It would. Whoever had the ball last, that's who was going to win that game.
See, now, if you tell me the whole league sucks now, okay, the whole league sucks defensively, like, that I can sort of get.
So this is where we are. They're just another bad defense in a league full of bad defenses.
So then it's a me problem. And I'm not being facetious or sarcastic. I'm saying I look at it and say I got to readjust my standards, because if this is what the league is now, then you don't need to play defense at all. Really, it's a joke. Like the up and down, you know, arena ball. It's never done it for me. It's not doing it for me now. Now the Patriots won the game, and maybe they'll win it all. And when I see it, I'll believe it. So I'm having a hard time with that. I've always had a hard time in baseball of you can't get a starter past the fourth inning and you're going to win a championship. But you know what? Everybody's doing it now, so maybe that's what it is. And I'm just having a hard time accepting that.
Meanwhile, in the Red Sox, you know, I didn't love the weekend. Again, I feel the same way I did coming out of that New York series. The first two games in Boston, you're like, yeesh, this doesn't look good. They didn't get good starting pitching. They had a series of asinine plays. Asinine. Where I would say, you know, Xander Bogaerts not charging that grounder last night and allowing, was it Correa? Who was it? Who was running down the line?
Correa.
Whoever. He pretty much lollygags a ground ball to short and allows an infield single that came around to score. Asinine play. The night before, Nunez was just atrocious at third. Asinine plays. I keep adding JD Martinez not running out of the box in the eighth inning on Saturday on a check swing third strike. Instead, he cries to the umpire. And, you know, doesn't challenge the catcher to get to first base. Asinine play. Joe Kelly getting into a measuring contest with Bregman there for stepping out of the box and then hitting him, which ended up being the go-ahead winning run on Saturday. Asinine play. It's like, well, this ain't going to hold. So if they, like, look, the way they played in New York was tremendous. They play like that, they're going to win. They play like they did in Boston here, they're not. They're not going to get through. I don't know. I've seen both sides from them. That's all.
Sure. Yeah. No. Listen. I know they're capable of playing better. I'm not telling you they're not. I just like at a game like last night. I sit there and again, don't forget, you know, the Kimbrel part of it. Like here you go again. You get yourself a nice little spongy lead there at the end of the game, and the same thing happens. Like to me, that is not reassuring. It's not even close to reassuring, and it just makes me say I gives me doubt. I don't believe when I see that stuff.
Okay, there it is, laid on the table. Patriots, Red Sox, I promise. Your reaction right after this.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz. Every afternoon, it's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It really is a difference maker.
Ooh. Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
There's a lot of hardware down there, you know, Cy Youngs and MVPs and All-Star games and all that stuff, but there's not too many World Series rings down there. They're hungry for one, and they have a shot right now.
Sale trying to get out of another mess. Runners go, and a swing and a shot, and it's in. in the left field, goes under the glove of Nunez.
And the Astros strike first, George Springer.
Alex Cora got ejected from this game. He continued to argue with James Hoy after that ring-up of Andrew Benintendi and got tossed.
Ground to third. Nice easy hop from Nunez, who drops the ball. Everybody safe. Boy, that is as routine as it gets. Here's Gurriel now. Two on with one away. He's on the first pitch. Down the right field line. Down by the pesky pole. And it is gone! Three-run home run knockout punch.
You know, my spirits are down. My confidence isn't down. Looking forward to getting back out there and getting another opportunity.
I know how good he is. I know he's been pitched well against them. I trust the guy.
A swing and a high fly ball deep left. This one's going to fly out of Fenway. A booming home run for Marwin Gonzalez. And the Astros lead 4-2. In the air, left field. That is slicing. Down in the corner. And it is off the wall. Two runs are in. And Devers is going to score. It's a 3-run double. Jackie Bradley Jr. Boston on top.
Alex Cora is going to take his chances with his pen. David Price will exit here in the fifth. Kimbrel has given up runs in each of his three appearances in the postseason. And that's high in the air to left field. Benintendi with his back against the wall makes the catch. The ball game is over. And Boston wipes the brow and hangs on to win game two. Series all even at one piece.
So there's your game one and two recap, courtesy of Jimmy Stewart, executive producer. Game three tomorrow, right around this time. Back to your phones, as promised. Joe and Lincoln, your thoughts on David Price last night, Joe.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out why I wasn't so pissed off at David Price, and I figured it out. It's not just how you pitch, it's when you do what you do. And here's what happened. He started out by sucking, right? The Red Sox get a lead, he gives it back. And then he gives up a monster home run, so they're losing. And then Jackie Bradley's up at the bottom of the third, two outs. You're not going to expect Jackie Bradley to get a bases-clearing double, but that's just what he did. And this kind of fluky thing along the wall. David Price comes out for the fourth, the top of the fourth, and gets him out 1-2-3 and looks good doing it. So he didn't get the runs back, and he looked really good. So we're just feeling the timing of that 1-2-3 inning, which is basically the last time we saw him, makes us all feel good.
Well,
he did suck, but didn't suck in the fourth.
He didn't suck as much as usual. He didn't suck in the fourth, but he left, you know, a guy on in the fifth, and they came and got him. He couldn't finish the deal.
So he's right, though. Like, look, and I'll give Price credit for that fourth inning. Like, you know, once you go ahead and take the lead again, don't make the same mistake you made before. So fine. Like, there were some good things in there. It's not like the whole thing was a complete train wreck. But in the aggregate, when you're giving him a final grade, standing O? Standing ovation for that?
No, let's start making shirts. Didn't suck in the fourth. That's sell those.
Exactly right, yeah. Murray. I mean, like, you know, so if we're just going to focus on the one small thing that he did well, you can't
Didn't suck in the fourth.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. At least he didn't suck in the fourth.
Yeah. Again, it's like I told you, that Bruins bumper sticker. This time we didn't do anything stupid.
Small victories. My God. It's not just, you know, you pay him $31 million a year. He's supposed to be an ace, blah, blah, blah. He was so good during the regular season. Do you know how far he's fallen off from where he was just a month ago? And he's not hurt, is he? It's just the playoffs. So, like, I swear we look and we treat him like there's a handicap there, or there's something like we're giving him like an extra, like an extra, I don't know, we're grading him on a curve or something, his own curve. When he's totally fine. He was lights out for most of the season. Now he's here and he's crap, but he wasn't total crap, so yay.
No, right. He's limited, so we'll give him a B.
Oh, my God.
He's limited.
Guy in Boston. Hi, Guy. Guy in Boston.
Guy, you awake?
Oh, yes, I'm right here. I'm sorry. I got 2 points to make. One, Brady has to make things happen because he knows the defense sucks. And number two, I hope Greg Bedard doesn't mistake the McCourty brothers for Ronnie Law and Deion Sanders. Bye now.
Okay, bye. See, once he wakes up, he's solid.
Oh, yeah, no. He gets right to the point, gives us in, and gets out. He didn't say thank you this time, though.
The Brady thing. So You know, he had that bad little area in the second half, bad couple series there, right when Kansas City started running. So it's like, maybe he does. He thinks, well, now I got to start matching. Like, and he goes outside of the game plan because he thinks he's got to turn into Patrick Mahomes or else they don't have a chance.
So what you're saying is Brady has a trust issue with the defense?
Maybe.
Well,
I don't blame him.
Yeah, that game had, you know, shades of Super Bowl 52, so I wouldn't blame him for putting it on his shoulders. I guess it's on me again.
We've got Brendan in Sandwich on the kickoff team. Yes, Brandon. Or Brendan.
Hey, guys, sorry. Yeah, I just wanted to talk about the onside kick. I think we had gone down. It was right after the Hightower interception. Then we scored a touchdown. And I don't know if it was an onside kick or a pooch kick or whatever it was, but we just gained so much momentum from the interception touchdown. And then they go down and only score three, which was nice, but it just didn't make much sense to me.
So that one felt intentional. I feel any time it's not a touchback, it's intentional. The guy has the leg to kick it through. He was kicking it through the end zone into the lighthouse side, which is usually into the wind. I don't know what it was last night. But if you're kicking it in through the end zone into the lighthouse, you can kick it into the end zone through the other side as well, generally speaking. So anything that ends up short of a touchback, I think, is intentional. So what are they doing?
I have no idea. The idea of it not being intentional never crossed my mind. They totally did it on purpose. Totally. I have no idea what's going on there. No, if they just haven't figured out how to cover kicks or what with the new rules, which in and of itself would be so un-Belichick-like.
Of anything, right. That'd be the first thing he'd figure out.
Think of that. That, like, the fact that they've gotten this far and it looks like it looks suggests that they don't know what to do, that they can't figure it out, that they don't know what the best way is. And what I would say to them is, just kick it out of the end zone.
Oh, they started to.
End it. Just kick it out of the end zone and be done with it.
Here's Kevin in Detroit on the Patriots running game. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, guys. So, Mike, I completely agree with you on running back. One thing I've been thinking about is, you think that Belichick is sitting back this offseason. He knows he's stuck with Brady, and he has to get him to 45 years or however long he wants to get him to. Do you think he's thinking, I got a good interior offensive line, he sees some value in Michelle, let's draft him, and then I can trade him in 4 years if there's some value there?
Oh, my God.
That's going to help him get Brady to 45.
Kevin, thanks for the call. I don't think that's Bill's motivation there. I don't. I think they determined it was the best value on the board. And I think it was a mistake. And not that he's a bad player. He looked good last night. He was good. I think the running game in general has been excellent. And he's a part of it. And his game last night was my favorite game that he's played. Again, I thought that 3rd-and-1 pickup was, to me, so much more valuable than some of the stuff he's done this year. 3rd-and-1, coming out of the 2-minute warning, last drive of the game, tie ball game, got to have a play. 3rd-and-1, a lot of years on this team is Brady in the shotgun. And like I said, I am I'm a running backist. I don't like running backs, but I'm not stupid. If you can get 3rd-and-1 consistently handing the ball off, then you hand the ball off. There's just less things that can go wrong. I mean, it's a no-brainer. And so coming out of the 2-minute warning, 3rd-and-1, last drive of the game, I said, this is either going to be Brady in the shotgun, or will they have the faith to go back to what's been a very solid, you know, setup for him, and that is Sony Michel between the tackles behind James Devlin, the fullback. And when they came out with Brady under center, Devlin at fullback, Sony Michel in the eye, I said, oh, they trust the kid. And he was paid off, and it was paid off because Michel picked up a yard that wasn't necessarily there. He stuck his nose in there. He got low and picked up that yard. And I thought that specific situation and that play showed me so much more than some of these runs that Michel has had this year through, you know, holes that are 15 yards wide that you could have picked up, Maz, with Billy Lanny leading, right? And so, like, positive night for Michel. He looked good, and the running game looks great. I still think you can get what you're getting from him from a million different people.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like James White still is showing more than Michelle is in the run game. And I'm not saying you could give it to him 25 times a game. But, you know, there was a sequence there where Kansas City got close. And I'll find it because I wrote it down.
Kenyon Barner picked up yards last night.
And not only that, but you know what? After Kansas City closed, they came out on first down. You know who's in the backfield? White.
Of course. So got to have it. It's White. But that's not Michelle's fault. He's a rookie and White's awesome. So I don't blame Michelle for that. I don't blame Michelle for anything. I blame the Patriots for taking a running back in the first round when you can find a guy like that anywhere, and I mean literally anywhere. But either way, he was good. But just when you, if you think it's Michelle, just look at the rushing totals of their other running backs. Kenyon Barner had more yards per carry than Michelle last night. James White, consistently all year long, has had more yards per carry than Michelle. So they're all picking up good yards. It's the line. They're run blocking terrifically, and they're committed to the running game a little bit, and it's good. So good for them. There's the running back thing again.
You want me to be a complete dink?
Yeah. Well, you're holding back all of a sudden?
There's a fumble coming. Mark my words. There's a fumble coming.
And why don't you just get it over with the Celtics, too, before they tip off tomorrow? They deserve a spanking.
Do they need a spanking tomorrow night?
Well, not tomorrow night, no. The guy think they're going to win tomorrow night. Yeah, they'll win tomorrow night, but they could use a good ass kicking, too, now that I think of it.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Mass.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Michelle behind Devlin as Gronk motions left to join Edelman near side of the field. Brady with a give to Michelle. Runs it left, and he's able to slither across the 35, ducking under the defense with a first down lunge.
He stays upright. He doesn't get it.
Mm-mm.
He lowers it, and submarines under the blocking. That's the only way he picked this up, because Kansas City had it. Ooh, man. Is that Jones again in the backfield? No.
Sony Michelle, 24 carries, 106 yards. Just picked up the two most important yards of the night.
Sony runs hard. He's picked up a lot of tough yards for us. I mean, that was a big run. Obviously, Tom's touchdown run was a big run. Not the guy you think you're going to get that from, but he did a great job at getting the ball in the end zone there, and so we didn't have to kick field goal there on 3rd and 5. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of good runs in the game, but, you know, that sometimes your game comes down to a yard, being able to get it or defend it, and there was enough space in there, so he made a good run to pick it up.
There's the Michelle run I can sink my teeth into. I'm not unfair, Murray. I'm firm but fair.
Yeah, but the 100 yards don't matter. That's for fantasy players every year. If it's just a chunk yardage now, two straight weeks with over 100 yards, it doesn't matter. It's for you fantasy geeks. But it's the yards per carry. The yards per carry, fine, I'll give you. But when you rack up that much yardage, that helps you in terms of ball control.
It's a bulk stat. It means nothing. It means nothing. It's like someone threw for 330 yards in a game. What does that mean? Did he throw three picks? Did the guy with 100 yards fumble? How many carries did it take? 35?
When they're racking up yardage like that, it proves you're able to hold on to the ball, you're controlling the ball, you're controlling the clock. Now, unfortunately, it didn't matter all that much last night against Kansas City when they have that many weapons and that kind of a high-powered offense. But it can only help going forward.
Look, I thought a lot of the yards that he got were there for any running back. I'm not taking anything away from him. I'm just telling you that the play that he made a difference was the one they had to have, that 3rd and 1. He stuck. I don't know if James White picks that up.
I bet he does.
You do?
Yep.
I don't know. That took a little bit of physicality.
Yeah, James White's got a little bit of physicality.
Well, okay. I mean, either way, all I know is that wasn't one of these gaping holes. I mean, Michelle has had some gaping holes. They all have, because the run blocking's been so good on this team. That was one where he had to stick his nose in there, find a little crease, and pick up a yard you had to have. That I'll take any day of the week versus this nonsense last game in garbage time against the Colts on Thursday night. Whee! See, Felger? Like, that was ridiculous. 3rd and 1, got to have it. Bill, trust you, and you pick up the yard all day long. Fine. Tip my cap to Sony Michelle on that one.
I thought he had a couple of good runs in the third quarter, too. They were on back-to-back plays down by the Kansas City end zone. One of them, he made a nice little sort of jump cut sideways, and the other one he broke through a couple of tacklers. Like, they were sizable gains, 9, 10, 11 yards.
I'll say this. He looked good. He looked good. He's looking better by the week. Okay? I'm fair. But the 100 yards, he gained 100 yards. Like, who? What does that mean? Who cares? Unless you get the extra points in your PPR. Like, what does that mean? 100 yards. How many carries did it take for him to get it? Were the lanes there or were they not there? Did he put the ball on the ground? No. Whee! I got 100 yards. Ah, it's so ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't feel the need to defend my Sony Michelle take anymore. I apologize for saying that he sucked. It was wrong. It was unfair.
Why are you apologizing?
Because that was a stupid thing to say. He doesn't suck.
But you don't want to be an apology.
Well, you know.
It's just a take gone wrong. Happens all the time.
Okay, so it's a take back. I'm asking for a retake is what I'm asking for. I forgot you're King Solomon over here, the king of fairness.
No, sometimes the takes go bad. No need to apologize.
Okay, fine. Then that take went bad. It was a take gone wrong. Sideways take.
It's just a take gone bad. That's all. You meant it when you said it. Turned out not to flush out. So there'll be more. Back to your phones, everybody. Sean in Hartford, how do you feel about David Price today?
Hey, guys. Before I get to that in 2 seconds, I really enjoy the show, but I appreciate a little bit more consistency. You have no problem with Sonny Michel for who he is. You have problem with the currency they have to spend together. Yet when it comes to David Price, we keep bringing up the $31 million. He was so happy to sign with New Orleans, I mean St. Louis, for about, what, $15, $16 million. Here comes a team with a boatload of money. He says, here, I want to make you the highest paid pitcher in the world.
So,
what
Sean,
say? No?
Sean, thank you for the call. The phone's not good enough to keep you on longer. I hear what you're saying. I frankly don't care about the $31 million.
Me neither.
I just sort of say it to pile on, if I'm being honest. So, like, the $31 million really is irrelevant. Here's, to me, is what relevant is with relevant with Price. He was your ace in the regular season. He was your best pitcher. He was lights out for, like, 3-4 full months. Then he gets to the postseason and turns into a puddle. And you applaud him for a 4-inning outing, which he gave up 4 runs.
Yeah, he didn't suck in the fourth. Everyone on their feet.
He didn't suck in the fourth. So it's like, why? It's like all of a sudden you get into the postseason and you treat him like, you know, like he has to hit from the ladies' tees or something. when this guy is your ace. So forget about what you pay him. He should be the one leading the staff, not the one that you have to baby and coddle and, like, you know, give a fake clap to when he pitches 4 innings.
Oh, no. Didn't you notice? He actually had to go out there and throw right-handed last night.
God.
You didn't pick that up? Oh, no, yeah, he was wearing the glove on the other hand. He had to throw righty. I mean, it's amazing. What a gutsy performance to get through that.
By the way, just quick, an update on Chris Sale. He was apparently released from MGH this morning and cleared to rejoin the Red Sox in Houston tomorrow.
Okay, good. Let's get a quick thought on that. So, on the Sale thing, I don't know how you can't worry about it being related to the shoulder. In other words, I believe it's related to the shoulder in some way. And it's not that, like, he's in there for a shoulder surgery or something. But could it be a reaction to something they're doing with the shoulder? I mean, any medication that he's taking for the shoulder, anything that he's using to get ready to pitch with the shoulder? Was there a reaction there that caused some sort of stomach thing? Otherwise, it's like he looks the way he looks. The velocity's down. The shoulder's an issue. And then he's got a tummy ache on top of it? Like, I don't know. It just feels that feels too tight to be a coincidence.
Yeah, I don't rule that out. I think that's completely in bounds. And I also think they're lying about his shoulder. Like, I think there's a chance that, I don't know, he had to go in there to get some sort of, and I don't know if it'd be overnight, but some sort of treatment to help, you know, deal with the issue. I have no idea. I'm just telling you that the idea that he's...
Would they blatantly lie like that? He's in the hospital for a shoulder procedure, but they said he has a stomach ache.
Yeah.
That's a little much.
I think they would. And when I say they would, again, I'm not saying it judgmentally of them, because frankly, if I were running the team and I had Chris Sale and he had a shoulder issue and we were doing things, you know, on the down low and trying to keep people from knowing, I would lie about it too. So you don't want anyone knowing that he's injured. You don't want anyone knowing what's going on. You make stuff up. Who the hell knows? How do we know for sure he was even in the hospital?
It's true. It's true. I just, like I said to you before, like, if someone's going to be obtuse and sort of give me gray area, I'll read into it. But when they're going to come out and flat out and tell me he was at MGH last night, I'm just going to take their word for it as opposed to them blatantly lying that he was somewhere else. He was in St. Louis.
No, so that's fair. I'm probably more cynical.
No, but that's like, I mean, they're going to, you know, if they're hiding something, going to be a little more vague about the whole thing. He was at MGH last night with a stomach ailment. I'm going to take him at the word that the stomach ailment may not be food poisoning or the flu, it may be related to a reaction he had to the treatment that he's getting on the shoulder. Like, I think there's something like that at play, but I don't think he's in there for the shoulder.
Well, look, I'll tell you, at the end of the day, to me, whatever it is, he's not right.
That's clear.
Okay, Chris Sale's not right. And I hope he can get right from here on out. He's going to get 4 days, I think, before the next start, assuming there will be one now, guaranteed, right? So, you know, to me, he's going to get time off here. Like, if I were them, I wouldn't pitch him in relief now. Use Price if you have to. Use someone else if you have to, but don't use Sale. Because if it's going to have the same sort of effect it did this time, and again, maybe those are unrelated too. I don't know. But it looks to me like you can't lean on him too hard right now.
Okay, real quick, something we haven't hit on today. Let's spend 30 seconds on it. Kent and Worcester, quickly.
Hey, guys, thanks for taking the call. I just saw something come across the wire about they're going to criminally charge this guy that threw the beer on the player on Hill. And it's I get the whole fan-friendly thing. You know, in other words, you want the venues to all be a place where you can bring the kids and all this kind of stuff. But yet, I saw Hill score 75-yard touchdown. He ran into the end zone. He ran through the end zone. He ran out the back of the end zone, and he stuck his face right in the stands. I thought he was doing a Packer leap to get Packer love like they do in Green Bay. And I remember thinking, what are you doing? That's all Pats fans in there, and you're going to taunt them? You're going to stick your face in there? So I guess I'm just looking for you guys' thoughts on that. I mean, is there any culpability on the part of Hill for...
No. The player should be able to run up to the stands and look at the stands without getting something thrown at him. I just hate the overreactions on all sides. Like, is the guy going to be criminally charged with what? Like, hopefully nothing that really impacts his life. Hopefully it's just a little slap on the wrist misdemeanor.
And it turns out it's a 21-year-old kid. Like, I know how I acted back in the day.
Let's not ruin the kid's life because he splashed a beer on the player.
Force him to spend two nights in jail.
Excellent. You know, he probably deserves to have his ticket taken away. Fine. But let's not ruin the kid's life. Let's not sue him. Like, Tyreek Hill's...
And Drew Rosenhaus, apparently, yeah.
They are threatening action.
Stupid.
Like... Come on. It's not just overreacting. And the kid deserves what he gets, okay? You shouldn't be sitting down there anymore. You lost your privileges there.
I think the penalties have got to be severe. I would fine any fan $5,000 per person, throw them out of the building, force them to spend two nights in jail.
Two nights.
And they're never going to be able to go to a sporting event in Boston ever again.
Ever. In Boston. Ever. Including the Cannons. You're out.
Death sentence.
Real quick, can we get 30 seconds on something else from this weekend?
Go ahead.
The line drive off Joe West.
Oh, that was so good.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that was so good.
That was the best thing in sports all weekend.
That was so good.
And he reacted like a mosquito bit a hippo.
Oh, my God.
It didn't even faze him.
Oh, my God. Oh, it was so good. I told you I was in the building.
He took it like a man.
Oh, my God. The cat calls. You want to hear some fan treatment after that. Oh, my God. And I joined in. Move, you fat ass, Joe! Get out of the way, Joe! Move it, you fatso! Oh, for like 5 minutes. It was wonderful. Oh, it was so good. It was so good. And the way, too, it's just like, that was a mosquito bit a hippo.
Wish it got him in the jowl so you could see it ripple a little bit too. Oh, I can't stand
it. I think the ball was dented.
Yeah.
Oh, that was good. That was good.
It's amazing that thing didn't return to Vasquez at like the same velocity.
Okay.
Bounce right off.
One more time, quickly. The off-air show, Felger and Maz on Facebook Live at 6:15. Special guest tonight, Dan Lifschatz. We'll do some gambling talk with Dan Lifschatz at 6:15 and all your calls and comments and questions on Facebook Live at 6:15. Also want to take a quick second here to send our condolences to the Martin family. John Martin, the cameraman at Nesson, who you've come to know in his battle with ALS, passed away on Sunday at the age of 51, Maz. I did not know John. I sort of joined the fundraising effort late. Like, you know, I didn't get there nearly enough time, but not that, whatever.
People have seen the Cafe Martin hats.
I'm sort of late to the story, but the Cafe Martin is John Martin, the Nesson cameraman, who you did know.
I did know him, yeah. And look, when I heard this today, because I didn't realize that the disease had advanced so far that this was imminent.
That's what I was trying to say. I didn't realize it was in that late of a stage.
Yeah, and I was, honestly, I was heartbroken when I heard it. And he's a good guy. You know, I used to run into him from time to time when I was out with my son when he was little, because he has a daughter about the same age. And I can't tell you how sad I was to hear it today. It really, really bothered me.
Okay, so condolences to Adrienne and the Martin family. That's his wife. Again, 51 years old. He's left kids. And just that disease, man, that is an insidious, insidious bugger, that ALS. That is the worst. So anyway, thoughts and prayers to the Martin family on that one. We will wrap it up with the final word right after this.
Felger and Maz. Miss something?
Come back and put it in my face.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. Now back to Felger and Maz.
They suck.
On Boston's home for sports. Felger's expert analysis.
Not from this talk radio crazy.
Maz's hard-hitting questions.
What am I, like the freaking abrasive police here?
The caller's bringing knowledge to the table.
Maz, the adults are talking.
It's time to recap this four-hour show in 4 minutes. It's the final word on Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
And the final word is brought to you by Town Fair Tire. If you are looking for the best deal on tires, there's only one place to go. That's Town Fair Tire. The best prices and great free services. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. So a couple of things to get to today. Once again, for those who might have missed Maz's overall take this afternoon, here's a refresher for you.
Tell me, Boston, who said this? Murray, Stu, who said this? I wake up this morning, this is the first thing that I heard. Quote, why did it feel like both home teams lost last night? End quote. Who would that be?
That would be one Anthony Maserati.
No.
Yep.
Why did it feel like both lost last night? We just played you the play-by-play where they actually both won. Those were the game-winning plays. Why does it feel like both lost last night? Thank you, Maz.
No problem. Expect, happy to do it.
Expect nothing less out of you.
I am. I'm a horrible, rotten, negative human being.
I literally immediately deleted the email and in bed said, I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this today. Like, give me a break.
Murray came in with the ass today.
Man, we've gotten to Murray.
He was pissy today when he came in. He was all kinds of pissed
off. Get
to
bed till 3:30. I'm grumpy when I don't sleep.
He shows up like, screw you guys, I'm not doing that. All right, Jim. Okay, no problem. We're all good.
As enjoyable as these championship series have been, both NLCS, American League, obviously you have rooting interest for your Brewers. These games too long for one Mike Felger.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Yep.
Can I just give you a quick time of game thought?
Yeah, go.
It's so bad. It's so bad. It's so bad. Friday was 4:03. 4 hours and 3 minutes.
You don't have to apologize for this.
4 hours and 3 minutes on Friday night. Last night was 3:45. The National League game on Friday night was 4:04. National League. National League with the pitchers hitting 4:04. Game one of the NLCS. I love these games. These games are great. They are awesome. And the drama and the buildup is just, it's tremendous. So I want to watch these games. I can't walk away from these games. I don't want to walk away from I'm invested in these games. So now the 4 hours really... Now you feel
you
the
feel
4 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
I actually sat there for 4 hours. I was in the building on Saturday. I was there all night. These guys holding the ball on the mound. Like, guys! And I started screaming at the red side. I was a little uncouth. throw the ball! Throw it!
I was doing it last night to David Price. Not that he could hear me, but...
Throw the ball! And it starts with the pitchers. The pitchers are all holding the ball. Now is when the four-hour time of game really impacts me because I'm there for all 4 hours. And it is so painful. They absolutely, positively have to do something about it. They have to do something. Oh, my God, with the signs. Like, oh, God, the signs and the resetting the signs and walking out to reset the signs and, nope, redo the signs and what's the sign? And the guy steps out. It's like, guys, you're just going to have to roll the dice that maybe they might have your sign. Just throw the pitch. Please, for the love of God, throw the ball. So, sorry about that. I stand by that. Oh, my God. Like, they might know that you're throwing a curve. Just throw the curve.
Exactly.
Just throw it.
Just execute the pitch.
And it's so bad now because they're all cheating, obviously, and they all know they're cheating. So it used to be just when there was a guy on second. Now there doesn't have to be anyone on because they all think that the cameras are on the catcher. And so they're constantly going out there, resetting the signs and redoing the signs. The guy only throws three pitches anyway, and you probably know what's coming.
So you got to give six signs. Oh, yeah, then it all depends on where the glove is positioned anyway. Like, you know, you put the glove on your knees throwing a fastball, so you get them looking at the fingers, and it's really something else.
I think pace of play really, well, never mind.
You're listening to Felger and Maz on 98.5, The Sports Hub.